Quitting smoking can be hard, but there's an unbeatable way of quitting from Nicotine. Use a Nicotine Clear Patch for all-day craving control. And for unexpected cravings, use a Nicotine Minis Lozenge for fast relief. An unbeatable way of quitting from Nicotine. And now selected Nicotine products are on offer at Sainsbury's. Subject to availability, selected stores only. Offer ends 1st of November. Significant improvement in quit rates versus patch alone. Nicotine contains nicotine. Requires willpower. Always read the label.
Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another edition of Insightful Thoughts and Callous Remarks with Joe Stasiak and Steve Callous here on Blog Talk Radio, Sportsology, we call it. And my man, Steve Callous, never disappoints, always delivers, is on the line with me right now. Welcome to show number 3, my friend.
Great to be with you. Looking forward to it as always, Joe.
Yes, sir. We have a lot to talk about, of course. A life celebrated. Along with Jose Fernandez, certainly a very sad week for the Miami Marlins and all of baseball and the sporting world. We'll get to those situations and topics. But first, I'll kick off with Steve with the World Cup, huh? After week 3, you've had 3 games now to digest. The rookie from North Dakota State, we'll just talk to Stevie. Oh, Stevie's not here. I must have lost Stevie. All right. Well, we'll try to get Steve back on the line shortly. Wait, I see him right now. We had a little problem. Stevie, are you there, my friend?
I sure am. Sorry about that. Some kind of phone connection thing, but this happens sometimes.
All good, pal. All good. Was talking to Carson Wentz. Wentz was there. Not only did they beat the 34-3, and it really watching him play.
Well, I mean, Carson Wentz, what can you say? He's the real deal. I mean, everybody in Philly should be happy. Certainly, I kind of wrote him off before the season, rookie quarterback. I will give you this stat quickly, though. The rookie quarterbacks or first-time starters like a Garoppolo are now 11-2. They've thrown for 15 touchdowns and 3 interceptions, and I don't think you can find that in the history of the National Football League. You got Wentz and Simeon 3-0 and Garoppolo 2-0. Prescott's been very well 2-1 with that 1-point loss to the Giants, thankfully.
Yep.
But it's not something I've ever seen. It's just unbelievable, but certainly Philly has to and I'm sure you're doing it down there, they have to reanalyze their preseason feelings. I did see Jeff Saturday on ESPN really eat some crow because he said once they named Wentz, there's the quote, once they named Wentz the quarterback, they're waving the white flag on this season, we'll see you next year. And then, of course, after the 3-0, now he's picking them to win the NFC East. But, yeah, it's hysterical. You hope this guy isn't like the curse or something. But, obviously, you got to put Philly and Wentz. And their defense has played great, as you know. I mean, obviously, you know all about them. Their defense has been incredible as well. To do what they did to the Steelers is just unbelievable. They beat up Big Ben, and teams just don't beat up Ben Roethlisberger.
No, I agree that rarely happens, despite Pittsburgh's lack of success in Philly over the years. I don't pay any attention to those trends, but they did just that. Yeah, Carson Wentz gets all the bells and whistles, but that Eagles defense with Jim Schwartz running the show, 9 points a game. They lead the NFL in points per game allowed, and it's no doubt that these games have not been that close. Your thoughts on why this defense, with some changes but nothing major, has taken such a turn for the better?
Well, I'll go to the opposite side of the ball to try and explain that. With Chip Kelly the last 3 years, Philadelphia had the least time of possession in the NFL. This year, they're holding the ball 14 minutes more per game by simply running what I think you and I would both call a normal or regular NFL offense. So, yes, there hasn't been a big change, but I think it is a big change. If you're on the field 14 minutes more per game, that's a quarter more per game.
Yeah.
And I think that in and of itself, plus I think this Malcolm Jenkins is very underrated. You know, I think he's a borderline superstar. He's certainly a star.
He's been tremendous.
And it's not just him, but I would single him out if I had to pick one guy. But I do think realistically, if you understand and we at least understand what it takes in terms of how it takes you out, for Chip Kelly, he wants to score in, you know, 1 minute and 32 seconds. Even in college, that was a problem at times. But I think 14 minutes less on the field per game translates into much better defense, even with essentially the same guys.
Connor Barwin, Eagles defensive end slash linebacker, said, "We're now concentrating, you know, basically." That was Warren Hamilton. And that's why they were sloppy. They had 10, 11 penalties per game, turn the ball over. Football. Your boys up there.
Wow.
21 down. And I thought Kirk Cousins, although he wasn't, didn't turn the ball over, and they kept around.
Yeah, well, I know you liked Washington in this game, and a good pick. I would never pick against the Giants. It's just I can't do it. But there were certainly big gaffes on both sides. Kirk Cousins at the half was like one of the most embarrassing things I ever saw. I thought the Giants were going to kick a game-winning field goal, and then they throw him out of Washington. Having said that, he played very well, and you know I like Washington.
Yep.
I'm a Giants fan, but certainly I like Washington. And they had their backs to the wall. You know, maybe one of those angles for next year, and you kind of used it here, I know, is the 0-2 teams. You know, we'll talk about Buffalo burying Arizona later. But the 0-2 teams do play. You know, if you're 0-2, you have whatever it is, a 12% chance to make it. If you're 0-3, you have no chance to make it. So
yep,
I do give Washington credit. Unfortunately for them, and this is a huge loss, you probably know this, they lost D'Angelo Hall for the year. But their offense was really cooking. This Jay Crowder, is unbelievable, and that's on top of DeSean Jackson. So certainly they have the offense to make some noise, but to lose a guy like D'Angelo Hall. The one other thing I wanted to point out, an incredibly gutsy, in my view, call that fake punt, where Trey Way, the punter, actually had to throw the ball like 40 yards in the air to
a
DB.
Great throw.
So totally caught the Giants by surprise. And I was thinking, when I thought the Giants were going to win early on, certainly up 14-3, Eli threw two interceptions, terrible interceptions, looked like the Eli of last year at times. But I was wondering what Coughlin was thinking, because I thought when Eli did come back on the field at the end, and you know, Joe Buck gave him the great, nobody wants to see Eli Manning in the last 2 minutes of the game.
Listening to him.
So I was wondering what Coughlin was thinking, because the Giants won their first two games just, you know, by a point and 2 points, and they would have lost those games a year ago, and they did lose those games a year ago. And here was another one looking at him. At least they're, you know, 2-1 now. They're not 3-0. And Coughlin, they took him cooking and kicking and screaming, as you know, out of the Giants. He lobbied for his job. And his defense will be, hey, they spent $200 million on the defense. Give me that defense a year ago, and I would have won more games. But it was very interesting. Washington stays in the mix. The Giants stay in the mix. I'm wondering if Tony Romo is going to be the next Drew Bledsoe, the way Dak Prescott is playing. But you have to give it to the Eagles. They're the top of the heap, and deservedly so. This guy looks like a big-time player.
And you have to wonder how Cleveland is feeling right now when they passed on Wentz, and then their quarterback goes out. Terrell Pryor was very impressive. You know, he played safety, he ran the ball, he threw. But that team anywhere until they have the quarterback situation down. Not only that, but they picked up a former Eagle, Cody Parkey, and he misses a 40-yard. I mean, they have the fingerprints all over their own.
Yeah, well, I think I told you my son went to college at Oberlin, 30 miles from Cleveland, for 4 years, and actually worked there his first year out of college. So we've actually gone to a few Browns games, and you feel for the Browns. They're in the wrong division. They're in a brutal division, but they're always right there. They find different ways to lose, like this time. it's just I feel bad for them because I think over the years they've had some talent. Can Hugh Jackson get the job done? Well, he's got them competitive. I don't know if that'll make Browns fans happy. They just find. And I will say this about Terrell Pryor. You probably know this stat, but he had 144 receiving yards. He threw for 35 yards. He rushed for 21 yards. And he's the first guy since 1964 to have at least three runs, three passes, and three receptions in the game. So he, and plus, as you said, playing defense as well. So he's a he's an all-around guy. I didn't think they could do this with guys. He's not a big guy, so we'll have to see what happens going forward. But at least, and again, this won't make Cleveland fans happy, and I got a lot of friends who are Cleveland fans now, but
at least
they're very competitive. I'm not going to say the arrow's pointing up because, again, the Browns, you know, they have to play the Steelers. I mean, they have to play the Bengals. The Ravens are reborn this year. So they're still in the wrong division as far as I'm concerned, even though they're playing better, although my friends in Cleveland would say just well enough to lose.
Yes, that's well put. That's kind of the story behind the Cleveland Browns. I do feel bad for them. I like Hugh Jackson. I wanted the Eagles to give him a good look. They did not. They went with Doug Peterson, who I hated that pick. That selection as a coach, and he's been tremendous as well in unison and in concert with his quarterback. He's done a phenomenal job. You mentioned Dak Prescott, no interceptions again, hasn't thrown one yet, and that includes the preseason. They take down Chicago, not a very good team, but still a pretty nice job in what he's done. Zeke Elliott comes back from his two fumbles, 140 yards. You mentioned Tony Romo when he does come back. If Dak is playing like this, again, he didn't throw four touchdowns, he didn't have 400 yards, but he's managing the game, playing well. Hey there, brother.
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry. I lost you for a second. Look,
that's okay.
I just threw that out. Could Tony Romo be Drew Bledsoe? I don't think Dak Prescott is Tom Brady. But Jerry Jones, I think last week said, once he's healthy, doesn't matter how Dak is doing. Romo's the quarterback. They've really gone to the well with Romo. They've really gone to the well with Romo for almost a decade now, and I think, what does he have, one playoff win maybe? So I'm not blaming Tony Romo. He's a gutsy guy. He's a very good quarterback, and I think Prescott will certainly grow from this backup experience. So, yeah, again, Dallas over Chicago. The Bears are really, they're really in trouble this year. But I do give him credit. The other thing I wanted to tell you, the no interceptions, Carson Wentz hasn't thrown an interception either, and I don't know if you saw this stat. But he throws more passes than Prescott. So Wentz has now thrown 102 passes in these first three games with no picks. The rookie record is 103, held by none other than Warren Moon. Now, the flip side of that is Wentz right now is tied with Case Keenum, who also had 102 before he was picked off.
Yes.
But I think Wentz is obviously going to break that record, whatever that means, and it means something for a rookie quarterback. And Prescott can't be that far behind, so we'll just have to keep watching these guys in terms of no picks. But the possession of the ball and protecting the ball is probably the most important thing in the NFL today, and I'll point to Manning's two interceptions. I assume at some point we'll get into poor Fitzpatrick's six interceptions. Protection of the ball is number one, and that's one of the main reasons why Philly has been good, and Dallas is just a one-point loss to the Giants away from being undefeated as well after 3 weeks.
Yeah, and don't sell my boy Romo short. He has exactly two playoff victories. The Eagles back.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
He should have more playoff wins. I know that's the knock on him, but I would give him his job back, just as Jerry Jones said. That remains to be seen. Oh, wait a sec. Wait. Hold on, Steve. Oh, I think the Jets just turned the ball over again. let's talk about the Jets.
Oh, boy.
Dick turnovers in the game. Your thoughts? I mean, you don't know what you're going to get. Throw around. You want to trust your players and your quarterbacks and your coach. You're not exactly sure what you're going to get, Ryan. So what are the Jets going to do with quarterback?
Well, a few things. To me, they don't have a backup. Geno Smith, to me, is not a better quarterback than Fitzpatrick. I will say this. I heard someone talking about Kirk Cousins before this week, and maybe there was a little problem because he had only signed a one-year deal and they didn't want to commit to him. And I wonder, so too with Fitzpatrick, as you know, he was looking for a three-year deal. He wound up taking a one-year deal. Now, these guys are making a lot of money, but you have to wonder if it affects them because they're playing for a contract. I don't know that it does or doesn't. I think in the Jet game where they were still in the game, and I'm not a Geno Smith fan at all, but maybe you would have made a change almost just to make a change after four picks.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
two of them were deflected. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you have to after four. It certainly didn't help him at the end. To me, it looked like he was just thrown into coverage, hoping something would happen.
Yeah.
And the only thing that happened was, you know, two more interceptions. So that's a problem for the Jets. And I think it might have been, I don't know, it might have been a problem for Cousins, but he certainly snapped out of it after two games. And as we talked before the season started in show number one, the Jets schedule, I mean,
is
I say again,
horrendous.
If they get out 3-3, it would be a miracle. I don't think they're going to be any better than 2-4. They might be 1-5. So here comes Seattle, who we thought had a dead offense, and maybe a bad ankle for Russell Wilson. Now he's got a bad knee. But they put up 37 after scoring like virtually nothing the first two games. And now they're coming. Now they got to come across the country. That's a big deal. But as you know, defense travels. So I don't know where the Jets are going to be after this game. I don't think I'm going to pick that game. But if I had to, I would pick Seattle. And then where are the Jets? And again, their schedule is brutal. And as we talked about, after their first six, they still have two games left with the Patriots, who, you know, if you're a nutty Patriot fan, and my son is, he's talking about going 15-1, maybe 16-0, because it's a miracle to me. You know, Mike Francesa in New York, he's a big, you know, he's the biggest radio guy, WFAN. He kind of downplayed what Belichick has done because he's not a Belichick fan. But I think that might be the greatest three-game stretch of winning regular season games, especially on the road in Arizona game one, in the history of the league. I can't even think of anything that can compare where you had virtually no chance to win the first game. Nobody thought, maybe the Patriots did, but even Patriots fans didn't think they could win. And now to have your number two quarterback go down in the middle of a game and bring in your number three quarterback who played pretty well. You're right, he didn't throw the ball around the field, but he played pretty well. And again, now it's only a one-week problem because Brady comes back for week five, and he's going to be livid that he got suspended for these four games. So I think everybody's still looking up at the Patriots, both in the AFC East and, frankly, in my opinion, in the NFL, maybe with the exception of Denver, if Denver, in fact, is going to be this good with a quarterback who's playing better than Peyton Manning did last year, and probably better than Brock Osweiler did last year.
Yeah, it's a nice segue. I was going to talk about Trevor Siemian, four touchdowns, no picks, a 132 QB rating. A seventh-round pick out of Northwestern over Paxton Lynch, their top guy to get rid of Mark Sanchez. I don't know if Paxton Lynch is ever going to see the field. I mean, this kid looks like the real deal. I mean, he's cool. He's composed. I mean, 14, he's on the road. He's done a tremendous job. They obviously saw something in him that they liked. And, you know, slung it like, you know, basically he said he could sling it. And, you know, Denver 3-0.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to give them credit. They are kind of a quarterback organization from, you know, Elway all the way to Manning, even though he wasn't good last year. Kubiak's the QB coach.
Kubiak.
They had a fair. It sounds like they obviously had a fair. You know, Mark Sanchez was probably third in a field of three, not surprisingly. But obviously they picked the right guy because he's played really well. Cool. All these guys, when you look at them, Wentz, Prescott, Garoppolo, and Siemian, I mean, they're cool, calm, and collected in the pocket. It doesn't seem that nothing seems to rattle them. And you're just going to have to see if some of these defensive coordinators, like a team like the Patriots, for example, when they play, I think they do play Denver in Denver later in the year. That could be a problem. But, you know, can those kinds of coaches, Belichick for years, you know, slaughtered rookie quarterbacks. But is this new group, for lack of a better term, is this new group so cool, calm, and collected that they can, coupled with good play calling by their, you know, semi-conservative coaches with a rookie, is that going to be enough to overcome something like what a Belichick and others do? I don't know. I don't think so, because I'm not a Patriots fan, but my goodness, you got to respect what they do. And I'll say it again, what they've done the first three games is something I don't think I've ever seen in the regular season before. And I certainly haven't heard anybody else talk about, oh, yeah, I remember back in 96 when fill in the blank did this. I just don't think it's happened, Joe. And I think that's a full credit to him and his staff.
He's been unbelievable. One quarterback we haven't really touched on, and I just think it's amazing. And don't look now, but the Rams are 2-1 with Case Keenum. And Jared Goff hasn't seen the field yet. He was the top pick overall. When does he come into play? What are the Rams, what Jeff Fisher going to do with that situation? Is he not seeing the field because they want to ease him in, or is he not? Did he not play well enough? Did they see something in him that he's really clearly not ready in camp and in preseason? What's the situation with Jared Goff?
Well, I think they must have seen something, because you'll recall the first game he wasn't even active. He was the number three. At least now he's the number two. They did put up 37 on Tampa Bay. I'm frankly not sure about the Tampa Bay defense, because Arizona put up 40 on them. The Rams, who you don't look, you know, really after that first week shutout against the 49ers, to see the Rams put up 37. Now, Todd Gurley, he had two rushing TDs, but he was only 27 rushes for 85 yards. So I don't think Goff's going to see the field if they can gut out these wins. So this certainly was not, you know, the Rams' vaunted defense gave up 32 points to Tampa Bay, gave up 28 opening day, beat Seattle. So I don't know what, you know, is going to go on there, but my sense is he's not going to play right now because they're, believe it or not, in first place in that division.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's just incredible. Like you say, you know, top pick overall. I know the Hard Knocks didn't do him any favors, but, you know, they gave up a lot to go after him. And, you know, Jared Goff supposedly is, and to me, he's watching all these rookies and first-time guys sell, and he's, you know, like you said, he didn't even dress week one, and you know, move if Case Keenum. Rams are 2-1 now, but they are. I can't get off of the NFL without talking about the Minnesota Vikings and Sammy Sleeves. They go into Carolina, the NFC champs, and they were down, I believe, 10-2 in that game. They ended up winning 22-10. Sam Bradford, pedestrian numbers, but didn't turn the ball over. While Cam Newton, three picks, and Jim Peterson, tied with Jericho. And Bradford, Minnesota, are they for real?
Obviously, they are for real, and you certainly picked them against Carolina last week. I know that, but no AP. No Teddy Bridgewater, who's now forgotten. I mean, I'm a Teddy Bridgewater fan,
not,
but, you know, he was...
Here, not around
Well, you know what I'm saying. So,
yeah, I do.
I still picked them to make the playoffs, and that was, I think, before they got Bradford, but after, you know, I just thought they're so good. And again, Teddy Bridgewater last year, 14 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, good manager of the game, was going to improve this year. But Bradford can make all the throws. I don't think he's ever had a running back like this, although he doesn't have him now, and he's got some weapons on the outside. But most importantly, they have an excellent defense. Carolina, it's fascinating. They're, you know, they've lost more games now in the regular season than they lost last year. You'll recall 15-1. And Cam, 8 sacks. I mean, 8 sacks. What kind of beating can he take? Those 4 head-to-head things he had in week one, 8 sacks now yesterday, did hurt his ankle but came back, but threw 3 picks after that. And also Kelvin Benjamin, who I view to be a huge part of this team, didn't have a reception. And that kind of tells you, look, Zimmer is a Parcells tree guy. You know, Parcells is a great coach. The guys who leave him became great coaches like Belichick. Belichick is a great coach, but The guys who have left him have not. So Zimmer really goes back to Parcells, and he's certainly done. And if you watch him talk, he's kind of like that old Parcells guy, just the facts, you know, nothing else. And I think that bodes well for them. And if anyone can get back, it'll be Peterson. Remember what he did after that ACL? He came back quickly.
Yes.
It was like a miracle. So, but obviously they can win without him. And I do agree with the general notion. An excellent running back is great. But if you have an average to above average running back, that's almost as good in today's NFL, with the big thing being look at their defense. And as you know, defense travels. And they traveled last week to Carolina, so give them a lot of credit. No, I think they're for real. And I picked them to be the wild card because I thought Green Bay would beat them. Now, Minnesota beat Green Bay in Minnesota, so we'll just have to wait for the replay because they kind of opened up this week. With Jordy Nelson having, you know, a Jordy Nelson day, if you will. And, you know, they had a victory at home. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. But that's an interesting division.
All right. Well, it's time for our picks before we move off the NFL, Steve. I was 2-4 going into this past week. Your picks, how did you make out?
My picks, I was unfortunately 1-2. The Cardinals shocked me. The Bills shocked me. I like the Cardinals on the road. The Bills fired their offensive coordinator, and then they, you know, ran all over the Cardinals, 33-18. I did have the Cowboys beating the Bears, which I thought was kind of a gimme. The game I'm kind of angry about, and this is not crying over spilt milk, but I did like the Titans, even though I picked the Raiders to win that division, and I saw the Raiders live and was disappointed, you know, the prior week. But I do want to go over the final plays, if I could quickly. Raiders,
sure.
Tennessee, Raiders are up 7. Sharp catches a pass from Mariota on like the 3-yard line with 57 seconds left. 2 or 3 guys are around him. I think they're trying to hold him up to strip him. And a Titan comes running in and kind of dives into all of them as the ref is blowing the whistle for forward progress to be stopped. They give the guy a 15-yard penalty when it was obvious that they were standing him up, as they do now, to try and strip him of the ball. So they get pushed back 15 yards instead of having first and goal from the 3 with 57 seconds left. Then on 3rd and 5, Mariota throws a touchdown pass into the end zone, offensive pass interference. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. They usually let stuff go down by the goal line. And then on 4th and 4, from the 12 with 13 seconds left, Mariota throws it into the end zone, and his receiver gets tackled before the ball is even there. No call. Now, it might have been uncatchable. I don't know. Final score, Raiders 17, Tennessee 10. And, of course, that doesn't mean they would have won, but it certainly means to me they would have tied up the game. So I'll go quickly with my 3 games this week. I'm a game under 500, so I'll have to try and catch it this week. I'm going Lions on the road in Chicago, Lions -3 over the Bears. I'm going to go Broncos -3 over the Bucs. It looks like the Bucs defense is not very good, and as we talked about, the Broncos defense travels. And I'm also going to go, this could be another shoot-em-out one, but I'm going to go Chargers at home -4 over the Saints. The Saints are very up and down, but the one consistent they have is a bad defense, and I don't know how they're going to fix that. And if the Chargers can do anything, you know, Rivers can just fling it around. So I'm going Lions -3 over the Bears, Broncos -3 over the Bucks, Chargers -4 over the Saints. How about you?
All right, my friend. Just to recap, believe it or not, I was 3-0 this past week. I had Washington over the Giants plus the 5. They won outright.
I believe it.
As we talked about, beat Carolina outright. And Detroit, one of the great backdoor covers of all time.
Of all time.
31-3, getting 7.5. See, that's things and kicking things, and they had the hook 7.5, and they came back. They lost by 7, but they did get the cover this week. Since he's 1-2, they got anybody at this point. I also like Atlanta at home 3 over Carolina. Carolina's a road dog. Again, I think Carolina needs to get their act together a little bit. We saw Atlanta have their way with the Saints, but like you mentioned, the Saints defense. Well, believe it or not, I'm going against you in this game. I think the line looks a little too fishy. I'm going to go with the Bucs getting 3 home. Denver, I just easy, and if it's too easy, usually it doesn't pan out that way. But those are my picks. I like Miami, I like Atlanta, and I like the Bucs this weekend. We're here with Steve Callis and Joe Stazak. Got 15 more minutes to go. Before we get to baseball, my friend, two deaths this week. The sports landscape lost Arnold Palmer, also Jose Fernandez, the ace of the Miami Marlins, and certainly D. Gordon last night, you know, first home run of the year. And tell me what you thought about that moment, and then we'll get to Jose Fernandez as a person. That was just an unbelievable moment last night.
Yeah, and I did watch that game. You know, the Mets, I'm a Yankee guy, but I always watch the Mets, and obviously they were the team in the wrong place at the wrong time, frankly. But Gordon particularly seemed to be, look, everybody was really hurt. This is just such a shocking, terrible thing. 24 years old, you know, left Cuba when he was 14. But D. Gordon had a number of things. He had 16, you know, shaved into his head. He had a helmet with the number 16. He got in the box righty. If you watch this, he got in the box righty for the first pitch, trying to imitate Fernandez's stance, and then he went to the left box and he said, "I never hit a ball that far in my life, including in BP." So clearly, the adrenaline was up for him, and it was really, you know, touching, terrible but touching. I will tell you something, though, that I've heard from a couple of Met fans, which some people thought Colon was throwing 84, 85 miles an hour, and Colon's been great for the Mets, but he usually throws high 80s, even hits 90 sometimes. And I haven't seen this in the published report, but I looked in some stuff, and I found an article that said, how about this quote from Bartolo Colon after the game? "I feel like it was great for them that they were able to win. I really would have enjoyed it if it were Fernandez who got the win over me." So I don't know if that's a conspiracy theory, but Miami certainly playing on emotion, certainly won the game, big win for them. But the bigger picture is, you know, to have this life snuffed out. His girlfriend was pregnant with their first child, and just a joyous guy. When you do think about Fernandez, if you saw Mattingly, you know, when you did watch him, always smiling, whether he's pitching or not, a real competitor. I don't know if there'll be a movement for him for the Cy Young, 16-8, good ERA. I don't know how that works. I don't know if that'll matter to voters. But we will have to keep an eye on that, because I think there's a chance he could get that award.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because I've heard that and I've seen that in published reports that some people think that they're going to give him the Cy Young, 16-8.
Well, he's certainly a candidate. Yeah, I mean, he's certainly a candidate, and you know, he would have had what, two more starts? He was supposed to pitch yesterday. He would have had two more starts, so he kind of has a full season of stats. This isn't a 60-day deal, so you know, that would be a nice touch. Was he the best pitcher in the league? He's certainly one of the best pitchers in the league. I don't think anybody would argue that, but a very, very sad situation, of course.
Let me just ask you this, and I don't want to make a big deal out of it. I had thought this. I didn't see any reports either. I thought Colon pitching to D. Gordon, it looked like a slow fastball, and he grooved it. Do you think that might have been the case?
Well, you know, that's kind of a strange quote. Colon, obviously Spanish. I mean, that's kind of a strange quote to give after a game. I'm glad they won. We're all competitors. I don't think I ever played in a game where I thought a guy was, boy, I'm glad he beat me. So, and plus the Mets are in the thick of it, as are the Marlins. They're just a few games out. So I took it more from a couple of Met fans who really follow the Mets, who know how fast Colon throws normally, and they just thought this was kind of not just a batting practice to D. Gordon, but a batting practice. You know, he gave up 7 runs in 2 1/3 innings. And Colon has been great this year for the Mets. Not bad for them.
No, I kind of thought the same thing. I thought that, especially to D. Gordon, and to me, I'm fine with it. You know, if you buy fine, I don't care. It wasn't like the All-Star game when the Cardinals and Derek Jeter, whether that happened or not.
Well, or 100 years ago, or 100 years ago when Denny McClain admitted later that he went up to Mickey Mantle and said, "I'm going to groove one so you can go ahead of Jimmy Fox." Threw two down the middle. Mantle hit the next one out to get 535 home runs. And McClain later admitted that. And Mantle eventually said, "Well, yeah, you could tell me that, but, you know, you still got to hit it out." Thankfully, to me anyway, as a Mantle fan, Mantle hit another home run to beat Fox by 2, because I thought it was wrong that they broke the tie on a groove fastball. That's the only other thing I can remember, like, in a real game. Of course, that was a meaningless game at the end of a season. But I think this – you know, do I think the Marlins would have won the game anyway? I do, because they were all playing on emotion, but they were all playing well. They didn't seem like jumped up out of their minds. They seemed to be focused once they got through that touching ceremony at the beginning of the game.
All right, and let's talk about Arnold Palmer a little bit. Certainly, it wasn't a sudden death. And tell me what you think or thoughts about Arnold Palmer. He certainly wasn't as accomplished as Jack Nicklaus or maybe Tiger Woods, but I think in terms of a golf icon, the foundation for golf to get as big as it has, I mean, I think there's no one bigger than Arnold Palmer yourself.
Yeah, I'm certainly not a big golf guy, but always knew and followed Arnold Palmer. You know the famous Arnie's Armies from the late 50s into the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
It's true, he only won seven majors, but he had some incredible comebacks. You know, he birdied the last two holes in 1960 to win his second Masters. His U.S. Open is legendary in 1960. He was in 15th place, seven strokes down, and he won the tournament. I mean, but I think the bigger picture for Arnold Palmer is he's bigger than golf. You know, he was the first million-dollar golfer, but he really came to the fore when TV was coming to the fore. He became a national celebrity. He did tons of TV commercials. And while Nicklaus did pass him, majors-wise and golf-wise, I think he still considered Palmer one of the greatest. You know, they call him the king, and that's not, you know, something you say for somebody who's not that good. He's in the inaugural Golfing Hall of Fame class in 1974. And even beyond that, aside from winning the first guy to win $1 million on tour, he was a prostate cancer survivor 3 months after he was diagnosed. He got back on tour. And after that, when he finally stopped playing, he designed over 240 golf courses. So he was one of those guys who was bigger than the sport and won, you know, won $1 million when baseball players were making, you know, $125,000 when Koufax and Drysdale were, you know, holding out in the 60s. So this guy was gigantic and really helped golf come into the TV world and make it more respectable for everybody, frankly, to play golf.
Did I hear that correctly, that in 2015, that would be last year, he made $40 million?
Yeah, I don't know. That might be correct because, again, his businesses were so varied. He was still doing commercials. I saw him. You know, he's got that Arnold Palmer lemonade, whatever it is, half lemonade, half iced tea. He was doing the commercials. I don't know the drug, but he was doing commercials
with
for
Chris
the
Fox.
Yeah, so that would not surprise me. He was a living legend until yesterday, dying at 87 in Pittsburgh. Much different, obviously, from the Jose Fernandez situation, life cut off so early. But, yeah, I think that's absolutely a possibility that he could make that much money.
Amazing, amazing. We're here with Steve Tallis and Joe Stasak. A few minutes left in the show. Appreciate everyone for checking in and catching up in the world of sports. Let's talk some baseball to wrap it up, Stevie. Get a wild card race is getting tight. Your thoughts on who's going to emerge and be in those wild card games next Wednesday night?
Yeah, you know, just bigger picture, I just want to say, I never liked the wild card at all. Once they had won, because in baseball was the last sport where you had to win. To win.
Yes.
You had to win division. Before 69, you had to win the pennant. In 69, you had to win your division. Now they had more divisions. I understand why you have to have one. Well, I'd rather you not have one, but if you have one, you should have two because there should be a one-game playoff to get in with the other three division winners. As you know, in years past, that wasn't even the issue. Today it is. Right now, you know, I picked the Mets because they had the worst schedule in the world. They lost to Atlanta. They lost to Florida yesterday in an emotion-filled game. But here would be my argument against the wild cards. So last 10, the Mets are 5-5. Last 10, San Francisco's 4-6. Last 10, the Cardinals, who are one game out of the second wild card, they're 5-5. And even Miami, after that win, they're at 500 now. They're four games out of the wild card. They're not going to get there. They're 5-5. So it's mediocrity down the stretch. And you're going to have teams in the mid-80s, you know, five games, six games, seven games over 500 make the playoffs. In the old days, that was unheard of. So I kind of like the Mets. And I'm going to stay with San Francisco, but, you know, I think St. Louis is the odd team out. But the only one I was sure about was the Mets. That's because of their weak schedule. But frankly, they haven't played that well. Over in the American League, also a tighter race, frankly. Toronto is one game on top of Baltimore. They're the second wild card. And Detroit and Seattle are two games behind Baltimore. I picked Detroit because they Baltimore, Toronto, Boston, and the Yankees are beating each other up. But right now, yep. Detroit's two games out, so I don't know, you know, with six games left, can they make up two games? I don't want to back off of my pick on Detroit, so I'll put Detroit in and keep Baltimore out. But right now, it looks like Toronto and Baltimore.
And how about going forward, you know, aside from the wild card games, the favorites to take it in the American League and the National League? And I think we talked to Sox and Cubs before, but your picks to take the whole thing?
Well, I picked the Cubs over the Indians before the season started, and I have no reason to think that's going to be any different now. And Cleveland, they kind of get lost in the shuffle out there, although it's a Browns town. You know, now the Cavaliers have won, and Cleveland can certainly make a run. Francona's been through this before with the Red Sox. So I still like the Cubs over Cleveland, no matter how the matchups shake up. Now, the problem for Cleveland is, you know, Carrasco's hurt. Kluber came out of the game the other day. He's hurt. They got a bunch of pitching problems that they really need to correct to go into the playoffs strong. If those pitchers don't come back, and I haven't heard a later thing on Kluber, except he just came out of the game. He's a hidden kind of Cy Young maybe guy, but I don't think he's going to get it this year. I think in the American League, you got to look at Happ. And Porcello, both of whom are 20-game winners, or more than 20 games now, I think. So I don't want to go off my original pick, but I just have to look at their pitching staff. We'll talk next week. I'll have to look at their pitching staff to see if it's going to line up for the playoffs. If it is, then, yeah, I do like Cleveland.
The Washington Nationals, they've been in the mix. They've done some things. They won a division or two here or there. They had that collapse, the six-run collapse of the Cardinals a few years ago when they were about to wrap up that divisional series. They're back in the mix, division winners. They got Scherzer, Gonzalez, Bryce Harper et al. Is this the year Washington did?
Could be.
Those are kind of like the alter ego Eagles where they have a lot of talent, but they just can't get over the hump.
Certainly if you gave me a second pick, I would pick the Nationals, but you just don't know what's going to happen. Certainly they are in the mix. No Strasburg, right, for the playoffs? There's no chance he comes back, Steven Strasburg?
Right.
Yeah, so right. I think that's obviously – that's a big negative. But the Cubs have pitching. If you look at the top in hitting, you know, they got guys in RBIs and good batting averages. They're kind of the complete team. And I think Joe Maddon, even going back to Tampa Bay, I think he's the best manager in baseball. He's the most innovative. He's really the guy who introduced the shift to where it's now a common occurrence. That's all Joe Maddon. So I think I still like the Cubs. But, yeah, if you ask me who I like for second, I would pick the Nationals.
And how about a dark horse? Could anybody emerge in one of those wild card teams, the Giants maybe?
Well, I don't know. It is
the Mets. I know they're pitching.
Yeah, well, the Mets, you know, their pitching is disintegrated. I think we discussed this before.
Definitely.
I wrote a column. They should go to a six-man rotation. I wrote it either last year. I think I wrote it last year. Look at the arms they had. Look at the arms that needed protection. Much like Jim Cott, when I interviewed him many years ago, said the 69 Mets with Seaver and Kuzman and Gentry and the young Nolan Ryan, they were the first team to go from 4 days to 5 days. So look at this Met team before the season. Wheeler was coming back. He never did. Harvey's done for the season. DeGrom is done for the season. Mats is hurt. Syndergaard's like the only guy who can pitch, in addition to my favorite, Bartolo Colon. So they've really, their pitchers up from AAA have done a really good job. I don't think it's the Mets. San Francisco, you have to say, they have like the worst record in baseball since the All-Star break. So you'd have to believe in the 2012, 2014, you know, they win every even number. You'd have to believe in that.
Sure.
I don't believe in that. So I don't have one in the American League, in the National League. And frankly, in the wild cards, I don't have one in the American League either because I just don't see – Toronto doesn't have great pitching. Baltimore is okay. But are those teams going to hit themselves to the World Series because they're going to have to hit themselves to the World Series. If you think the Red Sox are a sleeper, I would pick the Red Sox after Cleveland. Just not a Texas fan, but I still think it's going to be Cubs and Cleveland, subject to Cleveland's pitching.
Well, Stevie, I appreciate all your insights. Guess what? We got to run. We got to wrap up week number three. We appreciate it, my friend. Great stuff as always. We will catch up with you next week. Same bad time, same bad channel.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Always a pleasure, Stevie. Thanks, pal. Catch up with you in about a week. All right, we got to go. That was Steve Collis. I'm Joe Stimpak signing off. The insightful comments and the Collis remarks with Steve Collis and Joe Stasek. So long, everybody. Thanks for listening.
I finished the car. Can I have my allowance?
Have you washed it properly?
Yeah.
Inside and out?
Yeah.
Have you done the wheels?
Yes.
Have you replaced the exhaust gas recirculation valve?
Like getting your money's worth? Try our cheeseburger, made with 100% British and Irish beef. Just 99p from the McDonald's Saver menu. From 10:30 a.m., price and participation may vary.